Om Shanti. So you remember the last part of the Murali, the blessing, and last section in which Baba had put together powers, authority, thanks, and intellect. Yibby. Okay. Not really necessary. First of all, what I would like to do is give you a broader interpretation of the word buddhi. You know, we have in our soul, we have a mind, intellect, and sanskaras. And nobody really knows what this intellect thing is, because in English, what we know by intellect is pretty different from what we know by buddhi in Hindi. It includes intellect, but in my perception, it's much broader than that. So I want to first of all just give you a few additional words that you can include when you're thinking about your buddhi. Right? Now, normally in English, when we use the word intellect, we're referring to something a little bit academic. Whereas buddhi does refer to that, but it also refers to a lot of other things as well. So, for example, buddhi includes conscience. Now, in Hindi, the word for conscience is vivek. I don't know if you know that, but you do now. And so, it's a different word from buddhi, but the way we use that thing that's in our soul includes conscience. Right? And it also includes perception. Now, there are some aspects of perception which are more to do with the mind and the sort of intuitive vibe perception part of perception. You know what I mean by that? Where you get a spooky feeling or a happy feeling or this sort of thing, right? Well, it's sort of in the mind, but then, you know, the separation between the mind, intellect, and sanskaras, we don't really have a wall in between those three things. And the soul, when it's thinking and feeling, then we say the mind is at work. Actually, the mind isn't anything. It is also known as a faculty. A faculty means a capability. So the fact that your soul has the capability of thinking, we say that's the mind. But the mind isn't a thing. Otherwise, when you take the word the mind in English, you think of it as some kind of a thing. Don't go too far behind me, I've got to be able to see you. What's your language? German, Deutsch. Ah, yes, okay. Are you sprechen Sie Deutsch, translation übersetzen? Okay, so can you understand my complicated words in that case? Because in German we have a lot of words for different aspects of the consciousness. And in Hindi and Sanskrit we also have lots of words. And one thing that you find out as a translator pretty soon is that the words do not translate exactly at all. And so, like, yellow is easy to translate. But then ochre, primrose, it gets more difficult. So these words, because our subject here is the broad intellect, which Baba used the word vishal buddhi for, you see. Now, if you try to create a picture in your mind of a broad intellect, I don't know what that would look like. Because I don't think you'd be able to do that. Because the intellect doesn't have a look. You see. The symbol that Baba gives us for the intellect is the scales. Who's going to be telephone management? Okay. We are multitaskers, right? So the intellect is shown by the balance, right? The scales. So the intellect is somehow something that weighs something against something else. So it has a lot to do with discernment. Right? Because you have to try and figure out, is this real or not? Do I understand this thing properly or have I got it wrong? Do I really know what I mean by meditating? What do I mean by the mind? The intellect has to figure out what the mind is. Right? So these are very tricky things, very subtle things. Then this idea of a broad intellect. I think that one thing Baba has taught us is that we can understand things in terms of their opposites quite well. So the opposite of a broad intellect would actually be a narrow mind. A narrow mind. Like in English, we use the word narrow-minded. I don't think there's an equivalent in Hindi. All right, but when we say narrow-minded, we mean that we keep ourselves within a very small horizon, and anything which lies outside of that horizon is automatically not okay. Whether it is or not, we're not going to take the time to figure it out. We are saying it's not okay if it's outside these little boundaries. So for that we say a narrow-minded person. You understand what I'm saying? And so a person who is narrow-minded is also generally operating on the basis of preconceptions. A preconception is you figured out what something is without checking it out first. Like, for example, a small child who sees a guava for the first time says, I don't like that. He hasn't checked it out, he hasn't tasted it, but he doesn't like it because it's strange. You see? So anything that we encounter which is strange, if we are narrow-minded, our first gut reaction is to say, no, this is not okay, we don't like it, it's not part of our culture, Om Shanti, thank you very much, delete. And we'll only deal with this little area here, you see. So when Baba says Vishal Buddhi, my interpretation of it is that you want to try to identify where your limitations are in terms of your thinking and your attitudes and your perception, both about yourself as well as about the things that lie outside of you, and stretch that. Right? One example is that in, say for example, the general feeling that we have in Western countries 30 years ago was that meditation is a bad thing and it'll make you ill and probably you'll lose your mind and definitely you'll lose your money. This is how people thought about meditation at that time. So if the word was used, it would automatically make people run away, you see. But a few people whose mind was a little broader and who maybe consulted the dictionary about this thing thought, well, maybe it's useful meditation, deep thinking about what's worth thinking about, ability to consider things that are intangible and lie beyond ordinary everyday reality. That is interesting, right? And so gradually, over 30 years or so, it became slightly mainstream. Slightly. See? So one thing is to broaden the consciousness or broaden the intellect of a society as a whole, but a society is made up of individuals. And so as an individual, you know, there are, some people say, three kinds of individuals. One is the inwardly directed people. That means people who figure everything out for themselves and then say what they think. And then there's the people who are outwardly directed. That means they only are willing to think about something that some authority person has told them. And then the vast majority in between are slightly this way, slightly that way, but not quite sure, and they keep moving. But they definitely get pulled by the inwardly directed people. So the inwardly directed people are the innovators, right? Innovators, people who create something new. Now you know how Baba keeps on asking us to do something new. That means that he's looking at us as potential innovators. He himself is the greatest innovator, you know. He comes down and he operates extremely subtly through different instruments and gradually changes people's consciousness. And he collects up people who call themselves Brahma Kumars and Kumaris. And anyone who calls themselves a Brahma Kumar or a Kumari is different, right? If you look at all the rest of the people who you grew up with, there are probably not many of them became BKs. You're different. Why did you become a BK? Because it looked okay. The other people look at you and say, well, we don't know. So, becoming a BK means that you did something very innovative. So you couldn't do that unless you were fundamentally an innovator. There's very, very few BKs who just go along with the flow and become a BK. There isn't any flow like that. We're trying to make one, but we haven't done that yet. We're going out on a limb. And what we're doing is different. How we look is different. How we think is different. Isn't it? So, and Baba keeps pushing us, wanting us to increase that more and more and more. You see? So, the powers. Baba says about the eight powers and any additional powers, lots of powers we have. We could probably make a list of 108 powers if we wanted to. But the powers are abilities. Right? If you're Spanish, anybody Spanish here? No? Yes, un poder, right? You can do. You can do means you have the power. So, for example, if we say, you know, cooperate, tolerate, discriminate, face, withdraw, pack up, all of these powers, either we can do it or we can't do it. So what Baba says to us as soon as we get born as a BK is he gives us a birthday present of the eight powers. And then he gives us the rest of our life to figure out how to use them. So it's an amazing birthday present. You know, some people, when they get born, their families open a bank account for them. And every month or every year or whatever, they put in money so that by the time they're grown up, they've got an accumulation of money which helps them to get going in life. you know, and they give you an education and an upbringing, and all of these are instruments that empower you in the understanding that you gradually get to a point where you're fully empowered, which is supposed to coincide with the time when you're an adult. You see? And so you may or may not have good or bad, whatever of those. Excuse me. But when you become a bhikkhu, you get born, right? Sri Baba said, anyway, you're already my children, but nevertheless, we do say we got born, we became Brahmins, we got a third eye. I don't know if anybody has any water. So we got born, we became Brahmins, we got a birthday present of the eight powers. So the eight powers means we are able to do something. Thank you. I have an automatic cough, it comes with the job. One thing you'll find out about BKs who survive is they talk too much. If you still here after 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, that means you survived, you made it. You weren't one of the go-away people. So when you talk, eventually it takes its toll. So it's an industrial accident. But it's okay. Daddy, Baba, you know, all these important people, they cough. So the more you're important, it's okay to cough, right? So he used the word authority, right? So when you have a sense of your own authority, that means that you're adopting an attitude or you're adopting a position vis-a-vis the rest of the world. You see, so you feel a certain sort of confidence. I am an okay BK. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm talking about. I'm not having any problem, right? Then you are an in-authority person. But then occasionally some situation comes, some maya comes, which takes you away from your seat. You know, Baba says, set yourself in your seat of self-respect. And you are an authority. As an authority, operate your powers. With a large intellect or a wide intellect, right? So here you are in a position. The first position that we practice is, I'm immortal, so don't even think about trying to take me out because you can't. You understand? Because otherwise people feel fear in front of certain situations or certain people. And then when this feeling of fear comes, then your position of the I am an immortal soul is temporarily forgotten, which is called getting off your seat, or getting off your seat of self-respect. That means that you can easily be influenced, easily be victimized. And so then your ability to use your powers is compromised when you're not on your seat of your authority. Oh, Niagara Falls is coming. Thank you. So the thing is, what he's telling us to do is to set ourselves on the seat of self-respect. And that is developed by, over a long period of time, really changing your sense of identity. Now, intellectually speaking, that means theoretically, We all know I'm a soul, I have a mind, intellect, sanskaras, I'm made up of purity, peace, power, love and bliss, I'm eternal, immortal, Baba's favorite, most amazing child, etc. and so forth. We know that. But it doesn't remain continuous in your awareness as your primary sense of identity. What does remain permanent is what you acquired from your parents, your friend circle, your family environment, your school, your church, temple, gurdwara, whatever it is that you attend, where you're always being told what you are. And so, for example, in India, there is caste consciousness. And so whatever caste you are born in, the other people in that caste will tell you, you belong to this caste, and therefore, da, 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 this is your identity, you see. Then there are other communities where you don't have caste, but you have class, right? I don't know if you know this, but there's an expression called NOCD. Have you heard that? It's not like ABCD. You know what ABCD is? I actually forgot. You know what it's? The American-born confused Deshi. That's ABCD. NOCD is not our class ducky. Right? So people, this is usually unspoken, but they kind of look at each other according to how they calculate each other's class or caste or whatever, right? And so the way somebody looks at you, you also start looking at yourself that way. And so what Baba is telling us is do not feel the feelings of the looks of the people who are looking at you, feel the feelings of the look that I am looking at you. And sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. You understand? But the thing is, the influences that come to us from the Iron Age, from the world, from the people with the body conscious intellects and perceptions and so on, it doesn't matter what they say, they can be politically correct in everything they say, but the look says everything. Right? It's very subtle, it's unspoken, you can't say anything about it. But you know, sometimes you feel, why are you looking at me like that? And they say, well, I'm not looking at you like anything. Right? So it's very, very easy to deny or to pretend, but there's definitely a vibration that you feel because the way you appear in somebody else's mind affects you. It's very subtle, but it's real. And in fact, even Dadi Janki talks to us about being careful not to create karmic accounts by holding people in your mind with some negative feelings connected with that, because they will feel it and you will have to pay for it somehow or the other, sooner or later, you know, because it's a karmic account. And whatever negativity you send towards somebody for whatever reason, for whatever intention, they will double it and send it back. And in this way there's, you know, difficulties within people. So this is why we need powers. Because we do not live in a world of a blank sheet of white paper. We live in a world where we have all sorts of karmic accounts that we know very little about. We have all kinds of sanskaras that we're unable to perceive within our own selves. We have levels of ego and lack of self-respect and confusion and stuff like this that we find it difficult to analyze and quantify and become detached from. It takes time to do that kind of work, and not everybody's interested in doing it or sees the point of doing it. But Baba gives us everyday teachings and he says, set yourself in your seat of self-respect and as an authority operate your powers. So that means we have to think about our identity. You know, now with this word ego is as confusing as the word intellect, because in English when we use the word ego, if you're talking about psychology, what you need to have in order to be an okay person is a strong ego. But in BK language, if you have a strong ego, that's the opposite, right? So which one is it? And what are we talking about when we say ego? Because ego is our big obstacle. So I think we also need to qualify a little bit the word ego. In Hindi, there are a variety of words that are used. One is de ahankar. There's de abhiman. You know, there's rob. There's lots of different words to refer to different kinds of arrogance. And if you have this thing which we call in BK as an ego problem or the vice of ego, in English we may need to describe it a little bit more minutely and say that this person actually doesn't have any self-respect and is covering that up with a variety of masks. And sometimes we use the word false ego for that. So for example, in Hindi we sometimes use the expression, and we translate it as somebody has ego of their intellect. Right? Now, what does that mean? It means that a person has no self-respect, but they have quite a good command over certain aspects of academic knowledge, and they'll put that up as a front so that nobody sees that they don't have self-respect. That's called ego of intellect. You understand? So it has to be understood very precisely, otherwise you won't be able to think about it, and you won't be able to check whether or not you have it. I see. So every one of us has weakness in some or another area, and wherever we are weak, we have a tendency to put up a mask in front of that weak area, which is supposed to prevent people from noticing that we're weak. Of course, it never works, but we do it anyway. It's very amazing. Never works. Everybody can see everybody else's ego problem. And if you say so, that won't work. If you don't say so, it also won't work. So you just can't do anything about it, and that person can't see it, but they can see yours. So you have clashes of egos going on in relationships very often, you see. And so the big question is it possible for my intellect, which we'll describe it a bit further, to become wide enough and perceptive enough for me to be able to see my own ego and do something about it? Is it possible? So from Baba's point of view, of course it's possible because he's given us the powers. So that means there's a relationship between becoming skilled and competent in using the powers and finishing off this thing which I prefer to call false ego rather than ego. Right? False ego meaning a false front, a mask. A A mask, yeah. So a mask can also be like a shield. Ego is a shield. Because we put it up in front of our real self so that people see that and they think that that is me. It's not me at all, but it's what I'm showing you. You see. Because if I show you that, then you'll deal with me as if I am that. Right? Except that I'm not. So for some reason, I don't want you to see me. Why do I not want you to see me? Because I'm not quite sure whether I'm okay. So this is called lack of self-respect. We also use the word self-regard. We have regard and respect. They actually both mean the same thing, coming from different languages. And respect means to look back. You know, you look back on yourself. Regard also means to look back on yourself in terms of its linguistics. So, okay, what Baba tells to us is become antarmukhi. You know this word? Antarmukhi. They say antarmukhi sada sukhi, so that you remember. Which means that you have to exist on the inside of your face. Right? Position yourself on the inside of your face. Now, normally, we exist on the outside of our face, on the surface of our eyes, ears, nose, mouth, skin, and we interact very immediately and very directly with the day-to-day world through the sense perceptions. And this is called baharmukhi. That means people who live on the outside of their face. Right? So Baba says, do not be that, because what you need in order to operate well is distance between yourself and what you're dealing with. So if you are on the inside of your face, then there's some distance between you and what you're perceiving, which gives you space to be able to put it through the different filters that are known as the intellect. You can evaluate it. You can check it. You can kind of see it from a couple of different angles. And you only have less than a second in which to do that, but there's a big difference between a second and no time at all. Like if you're in a automobile accident or almost accident, you have 1 second in which to get your wits about you and stay alive. And if you're not with it, that's that. You missed it, you see. So if you are antarmukhi, you have this distance, and you also are in a better position to be conscious of your equipment or your weapons, which is your powers, the 8 powers or any of the other powers that you can list, you see. So seated on the seat of self-respect has to be on the inside of your face, which is a soul-conscious attitude to take towards existing. You have to be on the inside. And also, when you're on the inside, you're also more likely to be connected with Baba. When you're on the outside, you're really disconnected from Baba, because when you're on the outside of your face, you're absolutely locked into the world of matter and materialism. And so materialism doesn't mean that you like going shopping. Materialism means that you identify with matter, and that you are locked into it, and you consider it to be the primary reality. Whereas when you position yourself on the inside of your face, you're not going into your brain somewhere, but you're going into some different dimension a more of an inner landscape, and you're aware of a differentiation between the space, the inner space, and then the exterior material world, which means that you're not very far away from connection with Baba. And it is also said about the eight powers that you have them as a direct consequence of being connected with Baba. So one thing is you accumulate power through a long-term accumulation of meditation with Baba. But then another way to look at it as well, both of them are needed, but you need to be able to be connected with Baba, otherwise you can't use your powers. It's like if you have a computer but you're not plugged in, you may know how to use it and everything, but if you can't turn it on, it's not useful for you. This is why we have laptops, because they have battery at least. So you may have a little bit of accumulated power, but ultimately it's better if you're plugged in. You know, and so being positioned on your seat of self-respect, on the inside of your face, naturally and continuously plugged into Baba, where the power is there, then your eight powers are at your command at any time, you see. So this is the position that you have to be in. Now, how this is connected with Vishal Buddhi, right, the broad intellect. One thing is your intellect has to be operational, sufficiently operational for you to notice whether or not you're connected with Baba and you're in soul consciousness and you're living on the inside of your face. Because if you don't notice when you fall back into or slide back into material consciousness, then you could be considered as careless. You see what I mean? You don't notice. Being soul conscious is always something that you have to make effort to be. And occasionally you'll notice that you happen to be soul conscious. But mostly you notice that you need to be soul conscious. Is it not? And when you look at yourself and you find, oh, I'm actually soul conscious, you feel that you have achieved an enormous success, yeah? I mean, it's not normal and it's not frequent. And for a person to keep themselves in that stage, they have to be ultra super attentive. And we're so busy with external things that we find it too much of an effort on the whole, is it not? To be that much ultra super attentive is a very concentrated person. One thing we can see about what makes the difference between a person who's great or notable and just a general everyday person is the great or notable person is much, much more concentrated than the general everyday person. So one of the differences between us is how concentrated am I? How concentrated am I on being me? And on minutely observing the variations in internal experience as I move through the day. For example, I'm sure you must have had the experience of doing something which made somebody greatly annoyed with you. Have you? Yes? Anybody not? Have you ever experienced that you do something, consciously or unconsciously, willingly or unwillingly, which makes somebody greatly annoyed with you? Right? And this person's great annoyance will come in the form of some sort of heavy-duty thundercloud come hurricane hurtling through the atmosphere and bombing on you. And wah, right? And you feel it. So we prefer that people are not greatly annoyed with us. Because when somebody is greatly annoyed with us, even if they don't say anything, but the vibe is very heavy, and it's somewhat paralyzing, and you can't really operate while somebody's extremely annoyed with you. Is it right? So, because of this thing, we have a tendency to pacify people so that they don't do that to us. Is it not? Pacify, kind of calm them down, you know, and pretend and do all sorts of manipulations, anything, but don't get annoyed with me. Right? And people are quite afraid of anger. Right? So if you know that somebody's going to be angry with you, one of the things that you'll do is try and find somebody else for them to be angry with instead. Because they will be angry. You know, like in a family, one child does something bad, he'll get the other child in between him and the parent. So the parent gets that one and not you. This is how it works with kids, right? BKs can be big kids, yes. We do this, you know, with each other, and we don't admit it, but we do it, because it's very normal for a human being to do, you know. And Baba gives us powers, and he gives us authority and so on, so that we can move away from being an ordinary, regular, everyday, basic human to something great. I see. They use the expression Mahatma. Right? Mahatma, great soul. And then a Mahatma, they will also say, for a deity is a Mahatma, right? As a great soul, yes? They will say Devatma, but they will say the Devatma will not be called a Papatma. Devatma will be a Mahatma. A Papatma is a sinful soul. So a sinful soul is not a person who does lots of sins so much as a person who has a tendency not to notice what condition they're in terms of consciousness. Because if you don't notice whether you're body conscious or soul conscious, you'll be body conscious. And if you're body conscious, you'll be disconnected from Baba. And you're not noticing what's going on, so you'll get hit by Maya and fall down. And that's that. And then Baba will say, didn't pay attention. Right? And so paying attention or being concentrated and being aware, okay, I'm in here, and there's this drama going on, and I know what's going on in this drama, and you will be able to see any challenge coming from a long way off. So part of the expression Vishal Buddhi means that you have an ability to see a challenge coming from 100 miles away rather than when it's only about 5 feet away. You see, you can see it coming. That means you can position yourself, you can do certain things so that you are in the most advantageous position when the thing hits you. Understand? And the most advantageous position is all your weapons are ready and functioning, and you are, you know, facing the thing. And then when it comes, you take it out just like that with whichever weapon is required, whether it's power of tolerance or power of withdrawal or power of cooperation or whatever it happens to be. You see. But if you don't notice, then you get hit and you won't know what hit you. And Baba will say, didn't pay attention. And you'll get some minus points on your grade, you see, because he's sort of watching, you know, up there and seeing this one's doing like this, that one's doing like that, and he's got this great, you know, karmic grading book. And in the end, in Dharmaraj, he will say, okay, like 99% careless, consequently failed. Or he'll say, very careful, paid attention, understood, noticed, very good, pass. You know, so this thing of being aware, being attentive, noticing what's going on is a very good indicator that you are really doing what Baba's talking about, and you're putting yourself all the time in a position where you're just aware, so you're getting skilled in the use of the powers. And one of the things that Baba told us to do, I suppose everyone's doing it, is checking your chart before you sleep, right? So that means you have to go over all of your performance that you did that day. So you have to rewind your videotape and look at yourself and see, oops, you didn't pay attention, you made a mistake, you grade yourself. You were attentive here, you followed all the right things, you did it right, good, plus point. Self-assessment. And then by the time you get to your exam with Baba, there won't be any surprises because you will have understood yourself from within as you go along. And you broaden your intellect by really dealing with challenges that come to you in innovative and creative ways. Challenges that come to us, we can say this is our troublesome sanskaras. Troublesome sanskaras? It means it's sanskaras that you don't want to have, but you have them and they won't go away. Every time you try and get rid of them, they come back double. Troublesome sanskaras. Right, so we all have these. And these things repeatedly prevent us from being successful. Successful in our own assessment of ourselves, successful in the Brahman world, successful in the outside world, the Lokic family, wherever, you know. Areas where we fail is areas where our sanskaras need attention. And the experience of failure, if you fail, you know, right? There's an experience inside which is in your conscience, which is part of your intellect. So your intellect has to be sharp enough and you have to be honest enough to be able to tell yourself, I failed because I blah blah blah, whatever that happened to be. Now if we say I failed because this other person did this, that and the other, it means we didn't understand the question paper. So we automatically fail even more. So it's not possible for us to fail when all of our things are in order. So if we fail, it means something is out of order. So we have to identify what that is. And if our intellect is very narrow, we may not be able to identify it. So we have to broaden it to the point where we're able to see, you know, I am greedy. No, I'm not greedy. What? Of course I'm not greedy. Yes, you are. You're greedy. No. How can you say that? There's two people inside, right? And the truth is, you're greedy, but you don't like that truth. People don't like truth. Truth is you're greedy. Oh, no, I'm not. Okay, you can tell me you're not greedy as much as you like, but I know you're greedy. You tell yourself this thing. Okay, so you're greedy. All right, I'm greedy. Okay, what are you going to do about it? Well, let's consider greed. I am greedy. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. Okay, I am. All right, now how are you greedy? Well, I'm not greedy. Yes, you are. How, you see, like this, you have to talk to yourself because you have a great deal of resistance to the truth. This is normal. This is why we have this, you know, false ego, because it's the false ego that says, no, I'm not greedy. And it's the conscience that says, hey guy, you are greedy. And if you would take care of this situation, you would be successful. Now what are you going to do? Oh, well, I'm not greedy. No. You are greedy. What are you going to do? Here's the question. Deal with it. You see, so you have to, this is called self-discipline. You have to make yourself listen to the voice of conscience. And the voice of conscience has discerned, hey guy, you are greedy. And the ego says, no, I'm not. But because the voice of conscience is linked with Baba, it's getting strength. And because the false ego is getting delinked or unlinked from materialism, it's getting less power. So you're gradually changing the situation between the true self or the self-respecting self and the false ego. So it means the conscience starts getting more functional. That means the intellect is growing. So Vishal in the sense of strong. Some people have used the word moral muscle. And that's also a good word for, you know, healthy intellect. It's strong. It can operate. If it says, hey, you're greedy, it means you listen to me. You're not talking to some other person, you're talking to yourself. Listen, you're greedy. Okay, prove it to me. All right, sit down. I'll say, listen. Huh? Oh, yeah. I'm greedy. Right. Now, what are we going to do about it? You see? Well, I don't know. Well, let's be creative, you see. So the false ego doesn't have much energy, it doesn't want to deal with any of these things, and it just wants to do what it always ever does. And then when it fails, it doesn't like it. Now, this other self, this new self, this soul conscious self, comes along and says, hey, you know what? We have 5 minutes to become karmatit in the world cycle clock. Om Shanti. So there you are, your conscience is telling your false ego, you are greedy, and I'm going to explain to you exactly how this happened. You can say, okay, you try. Well, what is greed? Greed is acquisitive. You know, acquisitive? A tendency to get things that you don't necessarily need. So, how to detect whether or not I am really greedy and acquisitive? What do I have to do? I have to do an inventory. What do I have? What do I possess? Open up all your cupboards, open up everything, write it down. How many shoes? How many dresses? How many pens? How many, pieces of soap, toothbrushes? I mean, what have you got? I see. And what you'll find is you have, a lot of people have an awful lot of junk. Am I right? Because it's a lot of work to stay junk-free. It's like dust. You don't have to do anything, it will fall on whatever it is you have. And then you have to keep wiping it off. You see? And so things that you get that you don't need are like large pieces of dust that you have to deal with. You see? And so making an inventory of what you have will take maybe 2 or 3 days, but it's very well worth doing because it helps you to realize something about yourself just in terms of acquisitiveness. I see. Now, when Baba was here in Madhuban, you must have, you were all staying in Madhuban rooms, and you know that in the old rooms, what you had is half of a cupboard which has three shelves on it, and that's it. You have got to fit all of your stuff in there. And if you have more than what fits in there, then you have more than you need. And that was the idea, you see. Now, of course, we have extra cupboards and apartments and storage places where we keep our junk, you see. Because to remain junk-free is a lot of work. To put junk somewhere is less work than staying junk-free. It's harder work to put your junk somewhere than to stay junk-free. Right? It's hard to stay junk-free. It's easier to put your junk somewhere. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, sorry. So, you have an item. You say, oh, well, I might use that one day. If you haven't used it in a year, you're not going to use it. Oh, but it's too nice to throw away. Then you have to give it away. Oh, but it's my favorite piece of junk. So then you can trick yourself, say, okay, you got two pieces of favorite junk. Which one are you going to have? You can have one of them. And that way you can remove 50% of your junk, you know. Because there's just lots of things that we could be giving away. But what happens? You don't remember that you've got them, so you get another one. Right? And so when you do an inventory of what you have, you realize how many sweaters you've got. Ooh, I didn't remember that one. Is it usable? Yes. Okay, use it. You know? But our whole culture is oriented towards shopping. If you don't have anything to do, if you feel depressed, if you don't know where to take somebody, we'll go to the mall. Is it not? You see, so why do we succumb to the attractions? You know, Baba has told us Maya is very, you know, attractive. And so why do we have shop windows? If we didn't have shop windows, people wouldn't buy because they don't need. You see? So we have a difference between need and greed. And you only know what you need when you have an up-to-date inventory of what you've got. So part of the self-discipline of a BK is inventory of what you have. I don't think we are really told that much, but it's a very, very good thing. Because if you don't have more than you need, then you don't need much space. And then you're actually lighter. And then you don't have to look after it, because if you've got a lot of stuff, you'll look after it. And if you keep it in storage, then you're going to pay for the storage. And then you're going to be less wealthy because of being more greedy. You know. And it's, why do we acquire things? Why do we feel attracted to something that looks nice? It's because we add it to what we are already, right? Whether it's a dress, or a pen, or a mobile phone, or another computer, or so anything like this, it adds to ourself. That means that we fundamentally think that as I am, I'm inadequate. I'm insufficient. And if I add this thing to myself, then I will be more acceptable and more interesting to whom? To Shiv Baba? Probably not. He really doesn't care whether you have, you know, the latest mobile phone or not. And neither does anybody else, really. And neither do you, really, because do you need it to, you need it to do a few things. I mean, you need it to take photographs and wake you up in the morning and keep your appointments for you. But you don't necessarily need it to make your coffee or something. There are some extra bits that are not needed, but you pay a lot for them because they're the latest thing, or it lights up, or it, you know, has 58 different songs that you can get. You know? So, to really try to see what you need. And seeing what you need also takes you back to yourself. And so you sit yourself on your position of self-respect with all of your powers, and then you say to yourself, okay, who am I? What am I going to be doing, and what do I need in order to do that, you see? And so you may need to have a certain look, not because of itself, but because of what you want to do through that. Or you may need some electronic equipment, not because it's the latest thing, but because through that you can get a certain thing done. Why do you want to do that thing? You have to always look at your motivations. Well, I want to do that thing because Baba said I should. Or because then it will be, you know, enhancing me as a spiritual being. You see. And then you always have to check, are you deceiving yourself? Am I kidding myself? Is this just another mask, you see? So then as you analyze yourself more and more precisely and more carefully, you're able to become more and more honest about yourself, and then you're going to do less and less sins. Because sins are things you do because you don't notice that they don't need to be done. Like, people lie, right? Why do we lie? Well, we have to, right? Well, I can't tell the truth because they might not like it. Well, if you ask them, would they prefer to know the truth or your lies, they always tell you, well, I prefer to hear the truth. Is it not? And so why don't we give them the truth? Because we think they might not like it. Why do we think they might not like it when they told us absolutely clearly that they prefer that? We don't have too much upstairs, I don't know. Lack of logic. And part of it is a fear that someone will get angry with me. Right? Because we don't like that thing that comes. And why don't we do that? Because we don't have power of tolerance. So then we go back. Okay, my equipment, my power of tolerance is inadequate for the task. I have to do something about it. I have to increase my power of tolerance to a point that if somebody gets angry with me, it's fine, I don't care. Right? Because if somebody gets angry with you, what's it going to do? Nothing. Because you're just tolerating, that means you're neutral about it. They're just angry with you, you're neutral, what's going to happen? It'll pass. Well, I don't know. I think most of us are interested in truth, and most of us are aware that truth is a very unpleasant item, which majority of people, including ourselves, really don't want to hear, really don't want to look at, and really don't know how to deal with. Well, so we don't want to talk about it. So we'll pretend that we like truth, and in that way fully confuse ourselves. So then the activated conscience, the broadened intellect has to say, hey guys, in there, whoever there are, we are the true children of the true Father, so what's our problem with truth? Let's talk about it. Just like we talk about greed, let's talk about truth. You know? And so, then you have to go inside, and you have to see. Now, if somebody tells you the truth, you know what? I really don't want to live with you because da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that's the truth. Ooh, really? Oh, God, you know. So you feel a lot of emotions, and that emotion that you feel will go to that person who told you that truth, and they will not be able to handle it. So if you want to tell the truth, you must have full-on powers of tolerance and full-on power to face. Because if you tell the truth, you're going to have to tolerate something. It's going to cost you a lot, and you're going to have to face the consequences. So partly why we don't like truth and can't handle truth and can't face truth is because we don't have very much power. So what we're trying to do, we kind of do a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit there, a little bit there. But the one thing we have to keep on doing is getting more and more power. Because the one thing that's our problem is we don't have enough power. You see? So then the activated conscience makes the highest priority as the acquisition of power, personal power. So instead of acquiring shoes or pens or mobile phones, better get some personal power. So then you renounce this item that you really don't need because you have been smart enough to see that I can't have both. If I want personal power, then I'm not going to use my energy to get that thing which I don't need. There's a discipline of the self, you see. Because what I really, really need is personal power. You see? So all other things that come in the department of greed need to be secondary to the acquisition of personal power. Personal power doesn't mean political power or financial power or this kind of thing. Personal power means the levels of my eight powers have to be top. Then I have personal power. I see. So then I have to observe with my expanded intellect, what do I do which, sabotages my acquisition of personal power? Sabotage? You don't know what sabotage is? Sabotage. It's already German. Thank you. Yeah. Means we do things to ourselves which prevent us from getting personal power. And that's a very big mistake. Which is really a very big sin. And why do we do it? It's because we're not in our seat of self-respect. So we do not care about ourselves enough. Right? If I don't care about myself, I will let somebody victimize me. But if I do care about myself a lot, and I know what my principles are that are important to me, then I will not allow anything to compromise them. Other things which are secondary, tertiary, say, okay, I don't mind about that. So if truth is an important value for me, but I don't get promoted because I'm not willing to do some untrue action, then why would I mind about not getting promoted? Huh? It was too fast. Okay. If truth is important for me, right? And why would I make truth important for me? Why? Because I will not die. I mean, I have to live with myself, kalpa after kalpa after kalpa, for thousands and thousands and gazillions of years, and I will be me, and I will know what I do and what I don't do. So if I break my principles, I'll never be able to forget it. If I go against my idea of truth in order to advance in my position, say, you see, then I have compromised my values. And I will not be able to have self-respect, no matter what. See. So the more we become internalized, the more we become spiritually activated, the more the things that correspond to our soul take a higher position over the things that correspond to just adornments for the body. You see. Somebody says to me, oh, you know, if you kind of collaborate with me on this little deal, you know, and we can both make some good money here, but all you have to do is do this and this and this. And you say, well, maybe I will. And if you don't, all the other people are going to know that you're a bad person, because I'll make sure. Oh, really? God, okay, of course I'll do whatever you say. I don't want that, right? That means immediately you're a victim, immediately you're a slave, immediately truth has gone out the window. If you want to be truthful, it will cost you a lot. So the question is, are you rich enough to pay the price? You understand what I'm saying? So the broad intellect, and you're sitting on your seat of self-respect, and your highest priority is to acquire light and might for Baba, that means you're getting your bank balance. And then when this or that, you know, the attraction plus the coercion of Maya, you will say, go to hell, to the Maya, you say, or get out, as Baba has said. I prefer truth. Those things are not of interest to me, neither is it attractive to me, nor am I afraid of your threats. That means you are a person who's in your power. You understand? That means you can live with yourself for the rest of the kalpa or any number of kalpas because you have your self-respect. This is what he's telling us. You see what I mean? Cooperation is not the same as corruption. So, okay, if you say, all right, now, what is cooperation? Now, in Hindi, the word for cooperation is sahyog, which has the word yoga in it. And then you have another word, which is very nice, which is called yogdan. Yogdan also means cooperation. Yogdan. Yogdan also means donation of yoga, right? So what do I mean by cooperation? Cooperation doesn't mean that I do what everybody else wants me to do. That's not cooperation, that's being a victim. That's not a power, that's a character defect. So that means we have to really sit down and think, what on earth is this weapon that he's given me, which is under the label power of cooperation, sahyog. You have to think, what is he talking about? And so you go to the dictionary, good place to start, see what it says, see if it means anything to you. Then you dissect the language in any number of languages to try and figure out, what does this concept mean? And when, I don't know if you remember, but a long time ago we did a project called Global Cooperation, right, for a Better World. And there were some activities that people had created for that. And one of the things I remember about it that I found pretty notable was that when we engaged in activities together which involved cooperating, it produced a feeling which was very positive. And the word I called that was the feeling of cooperation. And so that is the experience, the resonance or the harmonic in the soul that lets you know if really cooperation is going on or some other thing under the name of cooperation. You see, because somebody can put a gun at your throat and say, you cooperate with me, otherwise I'm going to blow your head off. That's called torture. You see, it's not anything to do with cooperation, that's coercion. You see, coercion. Coercion in German, coercion to force somebody to do something under duress. His name is coercion. It's like, you can say controlling, but the real word for it is coercion, you know. And so, if you think that cooperation and coercion are synonymous, you're under an illusion. So that means your intellect has to be able to see all of the different words that are aligned with the concept of cooperation and see which is really cooperation, which is really not cooperation, but something else in the name of cooperation. Like, if you love me, you'll do the washing up. No, I can love you without doing the washing up. You know? You need a lot of discernment, you see. And so I remember there's one Murli in which Baba identified very clearly that the first thing you need to develop is discernment, because then you can figure out all the rest. But then getting to a point of discernment, we have to do a lot to get there, you know. He says jivan mukti in a second, but what you have to do to get to that second is a lot, and it takes a long time, you see. But I find it very useful for us to take little sections of Baba's knowledge and really go into it and see, you know, do I know what he means by this? And what are the different ways of interpreting it? And how am I going to interpret it for now? You know, maybe 10 years down the line you'll interpret it differently, because every day we're shifting little. And each bit that we do has an impact on all the other bits. And we can't do all of it all at once. We have to do little bit here and there. Right? But if you just go back to that phrase, sit in your seat of authority, self-respect, operate your powers as an authority. How do I think about that? How do I do that? You see. Then you've analyzed it, you've discerned it, you've felt it, you kind of know it a little bit better, which means you have meditated on it. Shanti, 12:30 came. So just have a moment of meditation.